Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Avid Gamer Podcast. I am E.T., your host of the Avid Gamer Podcast, and with me is a returning guest. I call him a co-host because he's so damn funny to talk to, and he just takes the lead on everything. It's my friend Brian. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, E.T., thanks for having me back.
No problem, man. We are here. This is kind of what I call a bonus episode, or like a single-serving episode, because these are the episodes I like to get together and just talk about certain topics. You know, whether if I have a guest and we just kind of bounce around. But this is the kind of episode where I just talk about certain topics. And today I want to talk about comic books of the 1990s.
Yes.
I know. Mm-hmm. I was a teenager through a good part of the 90s, and which means that I've been collecting comics for probably about 10 years because I was a nerdy teenager and I was a nerdy preteen and a nerdy toddler. Oh, you know.
And now you're a nerdy adult.
Oh, God. Even more so.
I've got, it's like a birthmark on your, just your whole being.
Oh, my character?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember all this stuff we're going to talk about, the comics of the 90s. It was a crazy-ass time for comic books because, you know, the 80s had a lot of quintessential works. You know, there was the X-Men kind of boomed. And,
sure.
And there was major Batman stories. Mm-hmm. And you had so many new characters being created. And I think the 80s really opened the America's eyes to the viability of comics.
Would you call the 80s, I know people refer to the gold and silver age of comics. Do you think that's more regarding just characters, like, oh, he's a golden age hero, like Superman, or would you say that the golden age or silver age refers to a time period?
Oh, time period.
Time period.
It's a time period.
Okay, would you say the 80s, or what do you think?
Modern age. We lump those in as modern age.
Okay, so we're still in...
We're still in the modern age.
What's the golden age, do you think? Is that now?
Oh, no. We're still... If you want to talk in terms of, like, what collectors call comics now is the modern age.
Okay.
We'll always be in the modern age.
Sure.
What we reclassify 80s as later, I don't know.
Okay.
But the silver age, the comics, and the golden age, mm-hmm. those are just years and years ago. Okay. 80s we still consider the modern age.
80s to now. Okay.
Yeah. But the 80s kind of had this thing where all these really important comic book works were coming out. All these characters were created, and the comic stores were starting to open, mm-hmm. and make money and thrive. Mm-hmm. And then the 90s came along. And this is probably the same thing that happened to the MTV.
And then the 90s came along.
And then the 90s came along.
The 80s had done right.
But the 90s,
fucked it up. Well, music and comics.
And comics
and clothing.
And clothing.
Movies.
And rap.
Hey.
Rap's off. We can't talk about rap.
Off limits, sir.
But there was a lot of really,
protect your neck.
There was really a lot of important stuff in the 90s. Or, you know, I say that the 90s kind of fucked it up, but there was still some cool stuff. Mm-hmm. There was good and bad.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But probably because I was a teenager, all this stuff, these are happy, vivid memories. If you're a comic shop owner, mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff that I remember from the 90s were probably a headache.
Yeah.
You know, first you had the oversaturation of comic books. There, the comic companies knew that their comics were selling issues like crazy, mm-hmm. and they knew they had speculators that were going to try to snap up first issues. Mm-hmm. So rather than just putting a normal print run, they were sticking out. They were printing so many issues that really there was no collector value to be gained from them.
You still see that now. I feel like you can go to, you know, certain comic shows or comic shops, and there is 40 issues, mint condition, of one thing that's just like, in this episode, Daredevil takes a nap.
Yeah.
And, you know,
right.
Goes to the eye doctor. He's still blind.
He's still blind.
Shocker,
yes.
At the end. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, for today, I'll just say from 2000 until 2013, that's what I'll consider today. Anything outside of the 1990s, mm-hmm. for a comic to come along and really make waves for collectors, mm-hmm. it's going to have to be something like The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where mm-hmm. nobody saw this series coming. So a smaller company like, you know, Image is smaller than DC and Marvel, which are the two juggernauts. And Image is still a huge company. Mm-hmm. But they didn't print a shitload of those comics. They didn't print a lot of the early issues of The Walking Dead. Now, you're not going to find, you know, you're not going to have a hard time finding. And now The Walking Dead's up to like 108, issue 108, 107. I think since issue 50 on, you're not going to have any hard time finding those comics. No. They just exploded.
Yeah, because of that. I mean, because of the show.
Yeah, the show, and it's great writing. People caught on to how good it is. Mm-hmm. But in the 90s, everything was getting printed in great numbers.
Were the 90s when you started seeing a lot of more just smaller comic, like, maybe not labels, but titles coming out, like the one-offs that you don't really see too much anymore?
Well, what you saw was you would see characters that didn't warrant a series all of a sudden getting a series, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And you would see, I mean, I think that was the time when Marvel and DC...
Looking at you, Jubilee.
Yeah, exactly. You can't hold a goddamn series. You're just good popping up in the X-Men once in a while.
You're just going to paff people in the face with your... Fireworks.
That's it.
Third degree.
And you look at these, you know, you look at the series now, and they ran like 13 or 14 issues, and then it was called a day.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're a quarter a piece or 50 cent a piece, mm-hmm. you know, in cheap bins. But, you know, back in the 90s, man, we were snapping up issues of that because you were thinking that they were going to.
Yeah, it's going to be valuable one day.
And you didn't. Rare, you know? And back then, you didn't have a huge secondary online market. Mm-hmm. Like, there was no eBays.
Yeah.
And there was no online retailers where you could easily get these books. You had to wait to you had to go to a comic store that you hope had the issue you wanted, or you had to go to a comic show. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to live in an area where there's a comic show. Yeah. And there's more started popping up, but mm-hmm. you know, plus Wizard magazine came out in the 90s, yeah. and Wizard was a monthly price guide. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, information source that previewed comics coming out, and they hyped the hell out of comics. Mm-hmm. It was basically an advertisement magazine with some prices in it.
It was. I remember getting some early issues of Wizard early for me. I discovered it. I was like, oh, my God, because, again, I was kind of a closet comic book nerd. I didn't want people to know because, kids, it wasn't cool. It didn't used to always be cool to like comics and wear the rim glasses and, you know, like superheroes and stuff. It wasn't always cool.
No.
But Wizard used to be, I think, pretty thick.
It used to be pretty thick.
It's not anymore, I think.
Oh, it's canceled. It's no longer out.
I thought I saw it. When did it get canceled?
Oh, a few years ago.
Really? I thought I'd seen it more recently. So, yeah, it's definitely not thick now. But it had gotten whittled away because I picked it up years later and was like, wow, I remember this being huge. But there was some content in Wizard. It wasn't just. I remember getting a really cool Spider-Man poster out of one.
Oh yeah, there was cool content out of Wizard. I used to love Wizard. What it is if you ever see people that like invest in stocks where you can check prices go up and down mm-hmm. on a minute basis, you see how feverish they get.
Yeah.
Well, Wizard was a monthly title that instead of going to the Overstreet mm-hmm. that comic book. Overstreet is a book that comes out every year and it's got prices on it. Sure. That's kind of what they base things on. Mm-hmm. Wizard had prices every month. Mm-hmm. So now people were very, feverishly looking to see what comic had gone up a nickel mm-hmm. or a dollar, you know? So I kind of blame Wizard a lot for the 90s, mm-hmm. you know, because they got what they deserved. They hyped up. And let me tell you what, man, Frank Miller mm-hmm. hated that magazine.
Did he
calls it like a downfall of comics. Yeah, he did a speech.
Wow.
He did a speech like at some college in like 2003 or 2002 where he just went up on stage and ripped up an issue of Wizard. I mean, really made a bold statement. Uh-huh. I'm not really sure all the ins and outs of that, but yeah, he hated that. But Wizard magazine was pretty cool. It always previewed like movies and toys, and uh-huh. then Toy Fair magazine kind of spun off from there. Mm-hmm. And
now there's 50 movie magazines that any superhero movie or any big movie is going to cover of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even stuff like, you know, what are the big ones that you'll see?
Movie magazines?
Empire,
EW.
EW always,
there's like SFX, which is special effects more, and then some TV. I think it's a British mag. But, yeah, a lot of them. There's a whole section now.
And, you know, even...
And the special ones that get put out for just, you know, Harry Potter, these humongous... Oh, yeah. Movies.
Well, even if Wizard was around today, I still wouldn't buy it for the price guide because I always go to I always go to eBay and I always go to like.
Yeah, we have the internet now.
That's what I'm saying. I look at what stuff is real time selling for. You know. Anyway, so
What do you think is the most? I mean, you own a lot of comics. What's your most valuable one? Do you know?
I don't even know because I don't check them. I don't check prices anymore.
Okay.
I have a lot of 60s Batmans and Justice Leagues and Supermans and Flash, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go through there and find out. You know. But I, you know, it's almost one of these things where I'm afraid if I find out the value of some comics, I'll be tempted to sell.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Not now. I don't need to.
Yeah. You wait till your kid goes to college and you realize you haven't saved.
I haven't saved anything.
No. Action Comics number whatever when Superman came out. Sell it.
Yeah. Sell it. Get him into college. Just staple that to his college application.
You stapled it. Yeah. I didn't want it to fall off.
But, yeah, man. But remember the death of Superman?
Do I? Yes, I do. I don't.
That was a pretty big deal in the 90s. I remember when that was probably one of the first times. Well, that was probably one of the first times I saw a comic book getting major press that didn't have a movie attached to it.
You see that more now, even without movies attached to him. Still, when Captain America died.
Yeah.
When Johnny Storm died.
When Robin died a few weeks ago.
Even though death is
irrelevant in comics.
Death is irrelevant now. Have you seen, I think I might have sent this to you a long time ago on YouTube. I think it's Max Landis.
Max Landis, the
death of Superman. Listeners, if you have not seen this, go online. It's like a 10-minute long video. 100% worth watching if you like comics.
Very accurate.
The death and return of Superman or something like that. And it's
star-studded little short film that he made.
We're talking Mandy Moore, Elijah Wood,
Chris Hardwick,
all these people, like, was that just in it for 15 seconds, going through the entire story arc, both in the comics and what was happening in real life in the DC offices of Superman? And what Max came up with was the only thing, what this comic did was kill death. It made death completely irrelevant.
Well, the funny thing with that is that the bagged issue where Superman dies.
With the black cover?
With the black cover, and then I think they had a white cover when he returned.
Mm-hmm.
That issue, I remember selling for $25 at the comic store within like a month. Uh-huh. So comic store owners were ordering a ton of issues and still trying to gouge on prices.
Yeah.
This is no shit. About a month ago, there's a small little comic shack that's down the road here in Virginia, and it's no online presence. Small little rented space, a very, very small store. They were giving away bagged issues of that Death of Superman with like every purchase.
No kidding.
Yes.
Huh.
Back in the 90s, it was like $25.
Yeah.
It was huge, and it really drug. It was one of the storylines that really drug itself out over. Gosh, God knows, kind of like Batman, the Nightfall.
Started out great.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of it, you're just like, oh, okay.
Well, so, you mean talking about Nightfall?
No, I'm talking about the Death of Superman.
No, Nightfall was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, if people aren't familiar, it's when the character Bane, who people will know from The Dark Knight Rises, he discovers who Batman is, mm-hmm. travels to Gotham, discovers Batman's true identity. Breaks him down. I don't want to give away any huge plot points, mm-hmm. but he breaks Batman's back. Fights mm-hmm. Batman, mm-hmm. breaks his back. Batman's got to overcome this horrible physical tragedy that's happened to him and come back to be the Batman. That was like a year and a half. That storyline
really
was a year and a half.
Was that its own? Did they release that as its own title, or was it just rolled into?
No, it was Batman. It was Detective Comics. It was gosh, there was a few other titles back then that tied into that.
Okay.
It was all of those. All of the Bat titles were all about Batman getting his back broken.
Okay.
Yeah. It went on for a very long time. It was good. It was super cool. I liked it a lot. I mean, even now, and I told you this a few days ago, I'm rereading the trade paperbacks. There's three of them, and I'm rereading them, and
those are huge, humongous. I was thinking about picking one up at Barnes & Noble the other day, and I'll probably look for it online. They're massive. It's like a collector's guide of a gun collector's guide or something. They're huge.
It's you know, if we're reading it now, the dialogue is a bit dated, but it's still you know, extremely cool.
Yeah.
But that was a huge crossover in the 90s. That made a lot of a ton of dough for DC probably. I remember when I went to the local comic store, the one that opened up in my town for all of 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it was the issue where he got his back broken, and they had like one on, they ordered like five copies because nobody in my town collected comics.
Sure.
This comic store is just doomed to fail. And it was the issue where Bane's breaking Batman's back, mm-hmm. and half of it's, and that's the other thing about the 90s, just nothing but gimmick covers.
Yeah.
Half of it was covered by a piece of paper.
Oh.
That you, like a two flaps. You yeah. could like turn a half a flap back.
Uh-huh.
It was just, you know, looking back now, I still have those issues. It's hilarious.
Was it bagged?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't bagged. Oh man, that's the other. Yeah, we'll get to that. But no, it wasn't. It wasn't bagged. I'm so surprised it wasn't bagged because it was at a time where comics were bagged for some reason. They were bagged in a non collector's bag. I hate to say it, but they were in a bag that almost seems, you know, people would buy duplicate issues of comics because a comic issue would come bagged, mm-hmm. and they would want to read it, but they know it.
Want to save it too.
So what do you do?
You buy two.
You buy two.
Well played.
Well played. Comic companies. Well played.
Yeah.
And they sometimes they would throw in trading cards or whatever in there. But
And any as far as Nightfall goes, any favorite parts? I admittedly have not read the entire comic, the graphic novels. I've read the novelization of it. I got that. I don't even know how old I was, but I really enjoyed that, and I'm definitely making it a priority to go back and read the comics now. But what was your favorite part of that?
My favorite part was probably when Batman goes after Azrael. Uh-huh. Actually, you know what? I take it back. I think Azrael, when he starts, Jean Paul Valley, when he becomes Batman, and he starts kicking the living shit out of the people in Gotham, and they have no clue mm-hmm. that this is a different Batman. Bane's kind of like, okay, this is not the same guy, but criminals are like, oh dear God, you know,
yeah.
what's he
carving the bat symbol into people's chests and stuff. Do you think I would have liked to have seen that they could have broken Dark Knight Rises up into two movies and done a Jean Paul Valley story arc? That would have been really cool.
That'd have been awesome. Yeah. You know, I think to explain, I don't know what it is. I mean, I think maybe the modern moviegoer's attention. Mm-hmm. I don't know if for Batman if they could handle that.
Oh yeah,
An origin of Bane, mm-hmm. Bane sending back all. If they were to do a Nightfall movie,
yeah,
how would they do that? It would be very long.
It would be extremely long. Yeah,
and, to do it justice,
right? I mean, and to the Bane, I liked Tom Hardy as Bane, but they could have done. I wish they had done a little bit more backstory on him,
right?
You know, like because I had people coming up to me because they know now. I like comics unashamedly now. Yeah. They wanted to know what's the deal with the thing on his face. Like they didn't do, maybe that's in the special features, but they didn't do a super job of explaining that.
But
there's like one line of dialogue in the movie.
Right.
And that's his main thing.
But you know, in the comics, in the comic books, you saw Bane sitting around without his mask on watching television.
Yeah.
Which is surreal.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
I always think of him with never not having his mask.
Oh yeah.
Like he's in the grocery store or whatever.
He's got his mask on.
He's got his mask on, like, can't get off the top shelf. Something, yeah. But, yeah, he was just hanging out, like, while they cook him more. Because he's not really running the show there because he needs the other people to cook the venom for him. Otherwise, he's chemically dependent on it and he's going to die.
Man, that was just a great story. But
yeah.
Back to the bagged issues. Gosh, I have so many bagged issues of comics. And they would just freaking bag an issue mm-hmm. for no reason. Mm-hmm. And they would bag first issues of a new series.
Uh-huh.
So it was just kind of like, oh God, now I've got to buy multiples of this if I want to, you know, read a series from the jumping off point. Mm-hmm. God, that was insane. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they really do that now. They don't do that now.
they probably, I imagine at least part of their thought behind doing that was not... They knew that the hardcore people like yourself would buy two.
Yeah.
But maybe the casual person walking by was like, oh, this one's bagged. You know, what's the deal with that?
Right.
I can't see inside it. Now I have to, you know, now I want to see what it is. Like create a little bit of of mystery there, a little bit of prestige.
Well, I think it was a big, probably something behind a lot of the gimmicks they would use, like the holographic foil covers.
Ugh.
I hated those, but so many covers were just those foil holographs of the character, and it came to the point where there's no reason to do that.
Thank you, God, for them not doing that anymore.
Yeah, they don't need to do that. That was just a horrible gimmick.
Yeah.
I don't even like looking at stuff like that. And you know, those little foil stamped holographs or whatever, they smudge when you touch them.
Yeah.
So you really had to be careful with the comic if you intended on reading it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was with the 90s and holographs.
I don't know. Like this magic eye, you know, the holographs on everything, folders, notebooks, comic books. Everything.
Yeah, it was
slap bracelets.
Everything had a holograph. Yeah. It had to be shiny.
Yeah, it did. You had to turn it to see the entire thing. Kids probably, there's an entire generation now that has to have glasses because of holograms and other things of that sort.
Yeah, I remember when Marvel put out their first, their wave of collector's trading cards, character trading cards.
Yeah,
like Marvel
I love those.
Yeah, they were awesome, but the chase cards in there, the ones that people were looking for,
so rare.
Well, they were very rare, but they were just holographs.
Oh, yeah.
God. And I remember I found the Silver Surfer one at one point.
And you went blind.
I went blind. Yeah, but first off, well, it looked pretty cool, Silver Surfer, because he's silver anyway.
Yeah.
But I remember touching it and smudging it, being like, well, this sucks. Oh, my God. No. I still have that. Still have that card.
I still have mine, too. And, I still have holes in the collection. I guess now that, you know, things are so readily available online, I should go and try to fill in the holes of some of those. But yeah, man, I can't tell you how many packs of those, like, you know, 5 or 10 little foil wrapper cards.
Foil wrappers, yeah.
And I'd have to, you know, I didn't have any money when I was a kid, so I'd, you know, have
steal
to
them.
Steal them, yeah. Or get some money and then buy them. And I have all of them already in there.
It's a disappointment.
This is ridiculous. Like, it's good. You can get the broad strokes out of the way. Yeah. But some of them, they can't have printed more than, you know, they probably printed 1/20th the amount that they did of most of those
right.
to make them more rare.
Right. Oh, I think so.
Marvel.
A couple huge series that came out of, there are a lot of things were rebooted in the 90s too. And probably some of the biggest selling comics came out of the 90s. Two of them would be X-Men, the first X-Men. You remember when the first X-Men re-debuted? It was written by Chris Claremont and illustrated by Jim Lee. That's when they had the five different covers.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth cover was a huge gatefold pullout of all four covers put together.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That thing sold millions and millions and millions of dollars. And what it did was it made collectors buy more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And now variant covers are huge again, and they're hotly debated whether people should be buying them. Now companies are just popping out variant covers left and right.
Mm-hmm.
That started in the 90s.
Yeah.
Started in the 90s. It kind of died down, but now variant covers are huge. But back in the 90s, I think variant covers, they were printed equally. Where now variant covers, now if you ever go to the comic store and you're like, yeah, what's this? Oh, what's that issue of Batman and Robin? I don't recognize it. Oh, this is the 1/20th. Which means for every 20 issues of Batman and Robin printed, this one pops out. It gives it a few dollars more value. But back in the 90s, I think they were printed equally. Every cover was printed equally. And if you are a diehard, that's the thing with us comic book collectors. A lot of us are complete, we need to be a completist.
Yeah.
You know?
Kind of OCD.
The
entire set. Yeah.
I'm that way now, and I'm trying not to. Financially, it's not a good way to be.
No.
But back then, I had to have every issue, mm-hmm. every cover of every issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's one thing I like about, I like to buy the compilations. I don't buy the individuals, and they'll have all the variant covers.
Oh, yeah.
In the back or whatever. I'm not quite as OCD, but yeah, I understand.
Like, how's this? If I enjoy the trade paperback, I have to buy the original issues.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to
scale that back?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Right. And I told you today, I think in an email, I'm going through a Thanos resurgence.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I love Thanos. He's always been one of my favorite characters to read, but I never went back and read his old ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I picked up a few of his the trade paperbacks of mm-hmm. his early appearances.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on eBay today bidding on crazy-ass expensive early Thanos appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was proud of myself. I mentioned in the email, Thanos was never really... I never really paid much attention to him. I knew who he was,
yeah.
and I knew a little bit about him because that was
my game as a kid. I wanted to learn about the characters.
Well, Infinity Gauntlet came out in the 90s, too, okay. So if you had to learn about Thanos at some point, yeah.
Yeah, but at the end of the Avengers, I knew who it was.
Oh, fuck yeah.
No one else did.
No one else did.
Very few people, like, even, like, the more hardcore movie people did not know who that was. Like, I was like, how do you not... He has a gigantic purple chin with four clefts in it.
That's their first introduction to the Avengers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for guys like us who have been, you know, fans for a long time, you know who that is.
Yeah.
But, you had the X-Men reboot, or the issue one when it restarted. It was good. Jim Lee is a great artist. Mm-hmm. I love Jim Lee. Mm-hmm. He was one of the guys who went off to form Image back in the 90s, which is a huge story from the 90s. If you're writing a book about the 90s comic book, the decade in comics, Image was a huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
Image was a bunch of the top artists at DC and Marvel. They were young guys. They were kind of brash. Mm-hmm. They went off and formed their own.
Yeah.
They wanted to be creator-controlled.
Sure.
Yeah, where they're their own taskmasters. Mm-hmm. However, we had a few in the lot that were not going to work so hard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what happened with Image. They put out a lot of good books though. Todd McFarlane put out Spawn, which is a really cool book.
Absolutely.
And Todd McFarlane is the kind of guy, I think, that he probably pushes himself really hard.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you had other guys like Mark Silvestri and Jim Lee, and you had Rob Liefeld. Mm-hmm. Who is a polarizing character in the comic industry. Rob Liefeld, he created Deadpool and Cable. He came along and started doing the New Mutants. And if you look at, like, the New Mutants, if you look at their facial structure and their body type,
mm-hmm.
That's all his doing, kind of exaggerated body parts. Mm-hmm. I always attribute that to him, mm-hmm. and very narrow, thin facial features.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everybody had a Clint Eastwood-y thin face.
Yeah, yeah.
And even today, he draws like that. And he doesn't work as much. He's since made amends with, like, Marvel and DC and worked for them. I think he may be on the outs now because he mm-hmm. just stopped working on one of their series again. But, yeah, he created Cable and Deadpool, which I'll always thank him for that because I love Cable.
Those are
lasting
Deadpool. Characters.
They're lasting characters. Those mm-hmm. are his creations. But, I think he had some issues with getting stuff done on time.
Yeah.
And from what I've read... He's also used the Image checkbook to pay off some debts that maybe weren't Image accumulated.
All right.
Yeah. But that was another... I mean, Image is still out today, and they put out a slew of great books. And they did in the 90s. Some of them... because whenever... It turns out some of those guys needed the corporate push to stay on track.
Yeah.
So back then, Image or comics in general for the independents, you had to wait a while between issues.
Uh-huh.
There's series like Wetworks and Youngblood and stuff like that where you just couldn't, and Savage Dragon, I think that was a little bit better.
Savage Dragon.
That was Mark Silvestri, yeah, mm-hmm. where you just had to, in the darkness, you just had to kind of wait for the books to come out. They always missed, like, deadlines and stuff
like
that.
Think about, like, the culture that goes along with you made it to be a professional comic book artist.
And you own part of this company.
Yeah, you own part of this company. You might not be the most, like, punctual, professional person. You might do great work, but you draw.
Well, these guys
for comics for a living. Like,
well, these guys were also kind of positioned to be rock stars because
mm-hmm.
they were young, hot commodities mm-hmm. who were doing their own thing. Rob Liefeld had a Levi. He was in a Levi's commercial.
Oh yeah,
Levi's 501 Buttonfly commercial. They used to interview. They had this series of commercials that they would interview young talent,
mm-hmm.
and they would be wearing their Levi's, and they would just talk about what they do. They did Spike Lee. Spike Lee had a commercial.
Oh yeah,
and it had Rob Liefeld. He had his commercial where he was, you know, sitting at a like a drawing table.
Okay,
and he had a character. I believe he had the Thing, a little action figure of the Thing on his on the table, and he's talking about it. And he's showing off his buttonfly jeans for another horrible '90s creation.
How do you put that organically into a conversation? Like when I draw the Thing. I like my Thing to be behind these buttons. Boom.
Well,
roasted. I'm out. Drop the mic.
Drop the mic. Let's look at those jeans for a second.
Okay.
No fucking zipper. You want to button seven buttons to take a piss?
Yeah. Like, and really? if you're you know, really got to go, that's bad news.
Here's
real bad news. Or you forget.
Here's how you examine your creation. Where the fuck is it now? Where are those button fly now? Hey, Henry Ford, where are your cars? Oh, cars are everywhere. Good yeah. job, buddy. You get a pass.
Yeah.
Hey, whoever created 501 button fly jeans,
yeah.
where are they?
Yeah.
Where are they?
Most famous exposure they ever got was, I'm pretty sure, Brandon Lee wore them in The Crow.
And
The Crow didn't have to go to the bathroom because he was too busy slaughtering everybody.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that cracks me up. Rob Liefeld's still around. I've tried to engage him on Twitter on a few things, but he's mm-hmm. extremely defensive about. I think he's probably been a whipping boy for a long time.
Probably, yeah.
He's because people blame him for a lot of things, maybe deservedly. Mm-hmm. But I think he's very selective on what he answers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. Also, one of the coolest things about the '90s, where it's kind of like the way the anti-hero became hot commodities.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, anti-heroes. Everybody got like. Their own series in the '90s. I mean, they created some fucked up characters in the '90s, like Darkhawk and Spawn and Nomad. Mm-hmm. Not Spawn, excuse me. Sleepwalker mm-hmm. and Nomad. Mm-hmm. And what they would do is these were just throwaway yeah. fucking characters.
Yeah.
And they would have like 12 issues and they'd go away. Where are they now? Who the fuck knows?
Yes.
But what they would do is they would stick popular characters in the series, like. This episode, the Punisher and Spider-Man would be yeah. on the cover. It's like, because you need to sell, you realize that character is shit.
Yeah, you got to sell some.
You got to
sell. He just drives around a motorcycle with a shotgun.
Pretty much. And yeah. he has a, get out. He's got a duster. Oh, my God. And glasses and long hair.
Jesus.
You know this? You know you know what I just described? Lorenzo Lamas and Renegade.
Uh-huh.
So, the '90s were just a stupid time.
Yeah.
But
they just take a real person. Sort of change him, give him a different name, and make him a character.
It's done. Really, it was just, I think when I was 14, I probably could have submitted some ideas
yeah.
to Marvel and had a comic
published. This kid's got it.
This kid's got it. He got the goods.
Bring him in.
But the anti-hero started, anti-hero kind of got popular in the 80s mm-hmm. with like Punisher and Wolverine. Mm-hmm. But in the 90s, man, they were just oversaturated with the anti-hero, like, Spawn and Wolverine and Deadpool and Punisher and all these characters just they were guest starring in every single book because yeah. people couldn't get enough of
Hulk too probably would be classified as an anti-hero you
yeah
think?
Well he was you know I consider him a hero yeah. I don't know it's hard to say Cable with maybe an anti-hero guys that fought with teams you could see their side
yeah
you know it was a very fucked out cliched concept.
Yeah.
That just took off.
Mr. Furious, anti-hero.
Anti-hero. But they would always get books, and, you know, they were always making... You know, I've tried to collect all the Punisher comics, yeah. all the stuff he's made appearances in.
It's probably not possible.
Same thing with Wolverine. It's impossible.
Do you have the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie?
Oh, yeah.
Do you?
I remember that. I remember VHS. Renting that VHS cool. shitty film.
Yeah.
And watching it and going, well, this is the best thing I'm ever going to do, Hollywood. And you know what? Thomas Jane put out a movie years later,
yep.
confirming that I was right as a teenager.
You didn't like the Tom Jane.
It was good.
I thought it was okay.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Look, Dolph Lundgren did just as good a job as Tom Jane.
True.
So just what do you say? And then Ray Park came along, or whatever that guy's name
yeah.
was. And what is that guy's name?
I think it's Ray Park.
Ray Stevens?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Who
knows? And he did just as good. So anybody that plays Punisher. Fucking Dane Cook to play Punisher.
Yeah, you just need to be brooding. Grow a 5 o'clock shadow. Dye your hair black.
And you need to be Punisher.
Yeah.
But in the 90s. Oh, yeah. In the 90s, you know, they're nothing but Punisher comics mm-hmm. everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good times. Good times. Well, look, I'm so happy we could talk about this because I love comic books so much and I love to talk about this. But we got to wrap this up. People are probably hearing us make fun of the
Tom
90s.
Jane.
Tom Jane.
Yeah.
God damn, I hope he doesn't hear this.
He just wants his kids back.
He just wants his kids. The rest of development.
I don't like that.
That's the best thing he's done thus far. That and Boogie Nights. But anyway, mm-hmm. guys, thanks for listening. I'm gonna do more of these podcasts where I just grab somebody, probably Brian, because he likes to ramble, and mm-hmm. I like to ramble. And I don't mean like ramble like in a motorcycle through town to town. I mean
or
ramble
a
like,
man.
Like
yeah.
talk pointlessly about a topic. But
that you do.
Anyway, hopefully we'll never get another 90s era in the comic books again. We'll never
you will. 2090 is coming.
Well, hopefully. I won't be around. I won't
you
be
might
around.
Be.
I won't be.
Medical technology.
You never know.
Yeah.
But anyway, guys, hey, thanks for listening. And visit me at avidgamerware.com or on Facebook. I've got the Avid Gamerware page. Or on Twitter, at Avid Gamerware. That's where I save most of my best dumb jokes. Or AvidGamerwareInc@gmail.com. So many ways to get a hold of me. Let me hear from you, because I like to hear from people that possibly listen to this by accident and address any of their compliments or praise. I get more.
Do you get some praise? Any praise?
My mom liked the podcast.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, but that's about it.
She's
so anyway,
a nice lady.
She's sweet. Mm-hmm. All right. This is E.T.
I'm Brian.
And y'all take care.
Bye.